Thank you, Bob. When I got this invitation to come back here today after last year, I wasn't really sure what that meant. I had heard some rumors after my last visit that some of the things that I had proposed had shook up the troops around here, and I don't know whether they were inviting me, didn't know whether they were inviting me back so they could get even with me for what I did to them last year or not, or what, but at any rate, the chance to come back and be with you all again and get a sense of the seriousness with which this school has been going about working on the very difficult problem of developing a doctoral level program in ministry was a chance I couldn't turn down. I also wanted to come because I want to see if I could learn something, because one of the hats that I wear at Candler this year is to be the director of chairman or what have you of our own in-career doctor of ministry program, and I know what the problems are, and so I'm looking wherever I can to find possible solutions. Nearly everybody with whom I've talked about the doctor of ministry, these programs that are burgeoning all over the country and seem to have many different shapes and sizes and many different approaches about them. Everyone that I have talked with about these programs seems to say at least two things about them. One is that what will make or break the doctor of ministry as a degree with integrity and depth and real possibility in preparation for ministry is how well we solve the problem of supervision of the contextual aspect, the in-career aspects of the doctor of ministry. No one that I've talked with seems to think that the DMIN can be simply a collection of academic courses that look like more of the same thing that most of us had as BD or MDiv students in our basic degree program. The second thing that I hear people say about the DMIN is that the danger involved in contextual education is that it can lack academic integrity. So that I see two sets of problems that all of the schools are working with that I have had any acquaintance with in relation to the DMIN, sort of at opposite ends. How can we do genuinely contextual, career-oriented, professional education that deals with the nitty-gritty problems of ministry in the context in which those problems take place? And at the same time, how can we develop programs that have some academic depth and integrity about them? That latter concern is the concern with the very ad hocish nature of some programs that I won't name, that seem simply to get some pastors together to talk about their operational concerns in a more or less disciplined fashion, but without the critical distance that the academic disciplines provide. Because if ministry and learning for ministry is simply a kind of pooling of our operational concerns, without the kind of backing off and looking at it as through the lens of some disciplined academic traditional approach to understanding the problems and issues of theology history, Bible, etc., then those programs are apt to lack depth. So there is the need for building into DMIN programs both the possibility of gaining some critical perspective, some distancing from the immediate concerns of everyday ministry, and getting at the most nitty-gritty problems of making ministry operational in contemporary life. Thus our concern today with supervision, because it's through supervision, and I'm thinking of supervision here in a fairly broad sense, not simply as what a field supervisor and a student sitting down together do together as they converse, though it includes that, but the whole way in which a program for a given student in the doctor ministry gets put together by faculty, field supervisor, etc. Our concern today then is with that kind of supervision. I want to begin that consideration with one assumption about professional ministry that seems to me is the heart or crux of the problem. And it's an assumption about professional ministry that I think theological education traditionally has often failed to take seriously enough. And that is that the professional minister always, I would underline that always, I don't think of any real exception to that, always begins his work with some problem or dilemma related to human need, which requires his decision and action. The professional minister always begins his work with some specific problem or dilemma related to human need, which requires his decision and action. This is to say that the professional minister does not begin with a set of theories about ministry, theology, or even Bible, and then seek to apply these. He begins at the other end, the other way around. He finds himself in a given context of ministry, be that a mill village, a rural church, a transitional church, a church experiencing rapid social change all about it, whatever that might be. He begins with that context that presents him with a human need or a set of human needs about which he must do something, requires his decision and action. For example, the minister does not begin by talking about or thinking about a theology of marriage and then trying to apply that to his ministry to the married folks in his community. He begins with the problem of divorce in contemporary America. The fact that Mr. and Mrs. Jones, who lived together for 30 years, their kids are grown, they're now about to separate or what have you. And then he tries to think through what kind of decision and action he must take in relation to that. In each case, whether that's the problem of divorce, the problem of a community that's being impacted by urbanization, or whether that's a little country church dominated by two families that have dominated that church for the last 50 years. He begins with that problem, or set of problems that will require his decision. Now, how are these decisions usually made by that kind of journeyman pastor? I think the way those decisions tend to be made by the journeyman pastor are first by the application of some common sense criteria. He tends to kind of think his situation through in a sort of common sense way, often picking up on the values that are afloat in his particular segment of society, picking up on the notions of right or wrong about that, and then he begins to apply these common sense notions to his situation. Or secondly, these decisions tend to be made by calling upon past experience as analogous. This reminds me of so-and-so that I have experienced before, or that Professor so-and-so said he had experienced. And so by drawing these analogies on past experience, we assume that history repeats itself, and this situation is like the last one, and we make those decisions on the basis of these analogies with past experience. Thirdly, there's a kind of informal advice seeking or putting heads together, which may take the shape of appointing a committee or getting a committee appointed, or may take the shape of some informal over the coffee cup conversation with one's fellow pastor, though I don't know how Baptists are, but Methodists probably do less of that than Methodist pastors than any other profession that I know of. It's a strange thing to me how the medical profession and the legal profession do not put any stigma at all on having to ask their fellow members of the profession what they think about a problem. But for pastors, it seems to be a kind of indication of failure if I have to ask somebody else what he thinks. So that putting your heads together tends to take a kind of informal, covert, secret, have to ask without really asking kind of quality. Or these decisions tend to be made by a process that I can only refer to as bumbling along or flying by the seat of one's pants. And I don't want to totally denigrate that, you know, because there are some problems that about all one can do is bumble with them until something floats up to the surface and suggests itself as a possible solution. But I don't think we can call any of these methods the methods of the doctor of ministry. Because to be a doctor of ministry is to take a more disciplined, research-oriented, inquiry-oriented, practice-oriented approach to solving ministry problems. And that's the point where we begin to have difficulty, somewhat because of the style of theological education that is traditional in this country, adapted from the European style of classical education. Because if bumbling along doesn't work, neither do methods of strict application of theory practice models of learning work very well. We all recognize this when we say, as we all have said, I'm sure, many times, that's okay in theory, but in practice it doesn't work. Theoretically, I ought to be able to do this, but my situation is not one that lends itself to that approach. We're saying that theory practice models often present us with problems. Here we are recognizing that there is a gulf to be gotten over between the bodies of knowledge that have been collected, which we all know at least something about, and the concrete situations of ministry with which we all must deal. bridging that gap is what we are reaching for in the concept of supervision as an educational enterprise. Let me illustrate this, or rather schematize it, with a diagram. I can't remember whether I was in the triangles when I was here a year ago or not, but I'm well into triangles now, in trying to schematize some of these things. I've come to think about ministry as emerging out of consideration of a three-cornered hat, a three-cornered stool, a three-legged stool, or a three-sided understanding of what ministry is all about. One corner over here we'll call the self of the minister. Ministry obviously emerges in part out of the pastor's own developing self-understanding, his own developing self-awareness as that self expresses itself in ministry. But of course, there are all levels of sophistication and depth of self-understanding in ministry. All levels of maturity. Well, I tend to convey by the arts here. Then I think, and here's where theological education has majored in the past, and I don't totally want to fault that. We'll put up in this corner, and I put it at the top deliberately, the traditions, and I make that plural, that inform ministry. The traditions that inform ministry, which includes historical theology, systematic theology, biblical understanding of the Christian faith, but not only those traditional Christian disciplines, but also the traditions that have developed in human thought by which we solve problems. Perhaps the most significant of which in contemporary life is the whole tradition of social scientific approaches to understanding human problems, like the tradition that comes from some of the great sociologists, like the traditions that come from Freud and his followers, or some of the other social scientific perspectives. Then down here, I would put the situation of ministry. I should say, of course, that there are levels of sophistication and depth in understanding each of these traditions that inform ministry. By the situation of ministry, I mean the situation in the world at the time I'm having to make that choice, that decision to take action in ministry. Unless I'm able to accurately perceive what it is that's going on here that calls for ministry, I am crippled in trying to make effectual impact upon that situation. So I have to have developing levels of sophistication and understanding what is going on. And of course, here is where some of the social scientific approaches are very useful to us. They give us tools of perception and organizing our perceptions. Now, my notion is that, I can't draw this very well because I'm not an artist. Somewhere out here, from those three strands or processes, reflections and understanding, comes a focus ministry act. We might say this is the target. We bring all these things together, and somehow in that process, an appropriate choice, an appropriate act begins to take shape for us. Now, I would be the first to say that in many situations, that focusing and bringing that all these strands together and deciding what to do goes on almost automatically without intentional reflection. But again, this is where it seems to me we need to think seriously about what we mean by the depth of understanding implied by a doctor of ministry. That means that this needs to be an aware, disciplined focusing of these three things into an act of ministry. Now, as you can see, there are varieties of traditions that each of us come from. All of us get something of our understanding of the Christian tradition by way of the social ethos in which we grew up and in which our parents grew up, the particular Southern way of putting that all together in a tradition that is certainly characterizes both Southern Methodism and Southern Baptist orientations. But it also comes out of our academic study of these traditions. Likewise, there are styles of selfhood. There are bents or trends or tendencies in the way we approach ministry as a self. There are varieties of approaches to understanding the situation of ministry. Now, it seems to me that the process of supervision is the process of nurturing this focusing in a self-aware fashion. Or to say that a different way, let's try to see if we can formulate at this point a definition of supervision. Supervision, at least as it applies to advanced levels of theological education, is that pastorally oriented, concerned about this self, that is in formation of ministry, a pastorally oriented teaching relationship which seeks to nurture the becoming process of the pastor and to facilitate the professional correlation or integration of knowledge about man, God, and the Christian tradition with immediate and specific tasks of the ministerial role in relationship to a specific community of faith and life. Let me go over that again. Supervision, and then I want to take the definition apart so we pick up the pieces of it. But supervision, as it applies in theological education, is that pastorally oriented teaching relationship, which seeks to nurture the becoming process of the pastor. And that's true whether that that pastor is 25 or 55. Becoming process of the pastor, and to facilitate the professional correlation of knowledge about man, God, and the Christian tradition with immediate and specific tasks of the ministerial role in relationship to a community of faith and life.
Now,
with immediate and specific tasks of the ministerial role in relationship to a community of faith and life. Now let me take that to pieces a bit. To be a good supervisor, you have to be a good pastor. That is, you have to have a pastoral concern for and sensitivity to this self that is seeking to mature in his or her understanding of ministry and practice of ministry. It is pastorally oriented in that it is not simply superintending something. It's not simply interested in the task. It's interested in the students learning from the task. But it's not simply interested pastorally in the sense of a kind of vague pastoral concern like one might have for one's parishioners, though it's analogous to that. But it's a pastoral teaching relationship that seeks to nurture something. Nurture the becoming process, the development, the professional development, if you will, of the student. But it does that primarily by helping along a process that is basically a process of correlation or integration. How do I get it together in order that when I focus a ministry act out here, it's not simply the result of my common sense judgment. It's not simply the result of my kind of flying by the seat of my pants, not aware of exactly what it is made me decide to do this. But it's a focused ministry act in which all of these dimensions have self-consciously been examined. The correlation of knowledge about the tradition with some immediate, specific tasks. It's not just general, it's concrete. Some concrete situation that requires action. I gotta do something about. Something going on in my community that needs attention. Something blocking the development of my community of faith's impact on the life of the larger community. It's immediate, specific task. But it's always in relationship to a community of faith and life. One of the problems with ministry, I think, in the past has been that it has been tended, and it grows out of our individualism, our tendency toward a kind of individualistic theology. When we thought about ministry, we primarily thought about what the minister does. Supervision needs to take into account not only the work of the minister, but his facilitation of the ministry of others. is a community of faith and life, and their ministry as well. Okay, now this definition, if you'll go with me that far, this definition can accommodate several different styles of supervision or modes of supervision. Don Bisinger up at Vanderbilt has done us all a real service in a little short article that all of you who are supervising or being supervised, as far as that goes, ought to read, simply because it, in a very simple, straightforward way, in a brief span of a few pages, set forth seven styles or modes of supervision. It's found in Theological Education, I can't remember the issue, but back about a year ago. He talks about these seven styles. Probably the most common style of supervision in contemporary America is what he calls the work style, or what I would call the superintending style. And here my Methodist friends all begin immediately to think of their district superintendent, who they tell me is primarily interested in one thing, and that's getting the job done. Getting the job done. It is a work-oriented style. Accomplishing the tasks, evaluating the performance of the tasks in terms of some larger purpose of the organization, the institution, etc. My own feeling is that that style of supervision has relatively little educational value. Relatively little. But it has some value in that any supervisor who says it doesn't matter how it comes out, whether the job gets done or not, is probably going back on what the basic purpose of ministry is in the first place, which is to have some impact on human needs in the contemporary human situation. Second style, he says, is the instructor. This assumes that the one who is supervising has been there before and knows about it, and the one who is learning has not been there before and knows nothing about it. I find that parish pastors that we have made use of in our supervisory programs tend to use this style. They tend to value, and rightly, value the experience they have had, and they want to share that experience, so they will give you a little anecdote of something, the problem they had that's analogous to this, and this is what worked, or this is what didn't work. That's a kind of instructor-learner style, which has some value in that you can pick up a lot of lore about ministry from a more experienced minister, but it has limited educational value in that it does not explicate the what it is that's underneath all this lore. Then there is the apprentice style, where the supervisor involves the student in his own work and hopes that some modeling will take place. I do it this way, and the student watches me, goes along with me on pastoral calls, etc., and then he kind of learns by apprenticing himself to me as the supervisor. Now that has real value, assuming that the one who is supervising the apprentice knows what he's about and is free to talk about it and free to let the apprentice raise questions with him about it. But the man who has the apprentice, who's supposed to do it my way, just because I know it works, is not going to be a very good teacher. Then he talks about the training style or training mode, and he relates this primarily to methods that have to do with fundamentally with professional socialization. You kind of initiate a person into ministry with a training style, with learning contracts, which the student goes out and tries it out, comes back with reports. He has hard questions raised for him by his supervisor, and he is trained or socialized into being this professional minister. Don Beisinger says that clinical pastoral education has been built primarily on this model, and I think, at least in its classic form, that probably is correct. Then he said there's a style that he calls the resource person style. Here, the supervisor is primarily one who knows what resources there are that one can call upon in trying to cope with this particular problem. And he shares his knowledge about those resources and sort of points the student's nose in the right direction toward the right resource. But here you begin to see how the student is beginning to become more responsible for the decision, the choice that is made, with the supervisor being simply the resource person. Then he talks about the consultation mode, which probably is the mode most useful in the Doctor of Ministry program. And that is the mode in which the supervisor attempts primarily to utilize his expertise to expand the student's own capacity to solve problems. Supervisor is the one who can consult with the student about what's going on, what he may be experiencing, what are the norms that come to us out of the tradition that inform this situation, and facilitates the student's solving of his own problem, making his own decision about the act of ministry. Then he says, finally, there's the mode of the spiritual guide, which is, of course, probably most traditionally and been most carefully, in a disciplined fashion, carried out in Roman Catholic theological education. Here, the primary concern is sharpening the student's sensitivity to discern God's activity in contemporary life, including the life of the student. Or, say that another way, learning to read life theologically. To find the living theological issues, questions, problems, affirmations that are in the contemporary situation, hidden like leaven in the meal. I think more of our supervision, particularly at this level in the Doctor of Ministry program, needs to have this quality about it. Another term that I like for that is mentor, M-E-N-T-O-R, the one who is a kind of reflector with the student. So I'm suggesting that the DMIN program, at least as this seminary, I think, has constructed it, can probably make the most use of the resource, consultation, and spiritual guide modes of supervision. Now, let's see if we can put these modes of supervision together with our first observation about the nature of ministry. We go back now to say that supervision must begin with the concrete situations of ministry and move toward deepening insight into these situations, then relating them to the pastoral concern for the development of the student as a person, and the informing of both understanding of situation, formation in the student, by the Christian tradition. In other words, we begin with the analysis of the situation in all its concreteness and move both toward the student's subjective involvement in that situation and toward the critical distance that reflection on the Christian tradition and its implications can provide. Rather than talk about that in general terms, I'd like to illustrate it with an example out of what I'm involved in our program. And I don't do this as the model or the way to go about it, but it's simply as a way of illustrating what I'm trying to get at here. In one of our Doctor of Ministry seminars recently, we had students divided into teams of two or three students. And as a team, those people were supposed to develop what we called a case study, which was the fleshing out of a problem of ministry that began with some perception of human need in the situation that one of those students was involved in, and moved in this direction of trying to get these three points of the triangle into some relationship. The particular situation that this particular team of students that I want to talk about brought was that one of these students was serving a small student pastorate on the edge of a community of about 25,000, where the state of Georgia had established a halfway house for people who were being discharged from the correctional institutions in the state. This young pastor had been invited to come and be a volunteer part-time chaplain in that situation. It was in his parish. He talked with his district superintendent, was encouraged to go ahead, so he volunteered for this position. When he got there, he found that this particular little halfway house program was trying, as the director said, to make use of a number of specialists in their program. They had specialists, a consultant in psychology, who came from the county mental health center. They had somebody who was doing some vocational training. They had somebody else who was doing something else. And the minister was to come as another specialist. Well, that began to raise some questions in this particular student's mind. What is the minister as specialist in this kind of context? Well, somebody suggested to him that what he ought to do was take some religious histories on these inmates, these ex-convicts. Well, he did that a time or two and found most of them didn't have any religious history that they could identify. Somebody else suggested to him that meant having a worship service at the halfway house. Well, by this time, he was intrigued with that whole business of being invited by a community agency to become one specialist among many. So, among other things, he had invited the director of that halfway house and the associate director and chief counselor to come to talk to the men's club dinner at his little rural, just out on the edge of town church. And they had come, and they had presented the Georgia Department of Corrections party line about halfway houses in local communities. And lo and behold, they ran into all kinds of what the student felt were redneck attitudes about ex-cons. What did the state mean by putting this thing in our community anyway? We have a good, clean community. Well, they were reminded by the director that most of these particular inmates came from that county. Well, I don't want to spend too much time developing this, but you begin to see how that little beginning problem of who am I to be as the specialist among many specialists in a halfway house began to flesh out into a problem in ministry. Well, what we have been doing in that seminar is asking these students to work up this problem, this kind of problem, into what we call a case study. And I've got a whole list of things that they are supposed to do with that. Like, for instance, a detailed depth description of what is going on in the chosen situation of ministry, including a description of the focal event, the larger situation of which it is a part, and the nature of the minister's involvement. The description may require some additional research or inquiry by the team, that is, a home visit or special interviews, and should discuss what is going on in both theological and non-theological terms. How would you go about describing what's going on in that situation I talked about in theological terms? That's an interesting problem. What issues, problems, or questions related to ministry are presented by this situation? These questions are to be more than single sentence potshots, but should consist of a brief but thoughtful articulation of a number of problems the situation presents for ministry and mission strategy, theological, ethical, and behavioral analysis, and the person of the minister. Which of these issues would you consider to be basic or critical for further understanding or resolution of the problem, and why? Set some priorities among these problems and state and defend your rationale for the priorities. Should the pastor's first priority be trying to attack redneck attitudes about convicts? Should his first priority be trying to demonstrate his competence as a specialist? What should be his priority? Well, etc. So we're trying to make use of this little, what starts out as a little problem of ministry, as a doorway or window into deeper, larger consideration of the problems of ministry. Now, what does all that say about the nature of supervision? And I want to make about four or five comments about that, and then I'm through. And here I want to get down to kind of operational terms in relation to supervision. First thing I'd say is that within that perspective, supervision means primarily asking the right questions. That is, the questions that broaden and deepen the student's understanding of what he has taken hold on. Students tend to ask how to do it questions. They become very operational much too quickly. Those questions must be held back until the deeper and broader questions become visible. For those of you who are students in the program, I would say that getting the most out of your supervisory relationship means learning how to shape the questions you bring for supervision. Learning to shape the questions in such a way that they will facilitate the deepening and broadening of your understanding of what it is you've laid hold on in this little operational problem. Secondly, I would say that supervision means assisting the student to focus the ministry problem. Having teased out some of these dimensions, situation, self, tradition, and supervision means assisting the student to sort out his perceptions of the situation, his what is going on here questions, his what is going on with me questions, and all the theological, ethical, historical norms that are informing the understanding of ministry here. How is this a sample of the human situation? What is God up to in this situation? Getting those issues focused, which usually begins to home in on some issues of ministry, like the issue of the minister as a specialist in the community among many specialists, or the issue of social action versus pastoral care as an approach to dealing with the situation in the halfway house. Thirdly, supervision means modeling theological reflection. There is no term that's being kicked around in doctoral ministry programs around the country more than that term, theological reflection. And I must confess to you that I often feel that that term is being kicked around in the dark. We don't really know what it is we're about. What I think I mean by theological reflection is fundamentally the task of what had traditionally has been called practical theology or pastoral theology. What does this situation or this problematic that we've got our hands on here have to say back toward theology as a historical or systematic enterprise? Or another way to say that, I think theological reflection is constructive theology at its best. It's the way Karl Barth and Martin Luther and a whole lot of other great historical figures in theology went about developing their ideas about their systems of theology. Karl Barth was always involved in a situation of ministry on which he reflected. And out of those reflections came back some questions that moved toward affirmations. For example, the halfway house certainly illuminates for us, at least for me, the corporate nature of sin and salvation, and the difficulty of focusing ministry through a purely individualistic approach to these questions. And that calls for reflection and sometimes reconstruction of one's theology of ministry. Okay, then I would say supervision means sorting over and teasing out priorities and options for ministry. Uh, of all the things I could possibly do, what should I do first? What should be given highest priority? Where should I throw my weight in this situation? By what criteria do I make that decision? Why do this first rather than something else? Sorting over and teasing out priorities and options for ministry. And finally, supervision means supporting and or confronting, and those usually go together, an arm around the shoulders and often a kick in the pants. Supporting and or confronting the student as he or she makes ministry decisions, which are really wagers that one has perceived it accurately and sorted out the priorities appropriately. And one inevitably will make mistakes. So supervision means giving support as well as confrontation. Well, have I overwhelmed you with the complexity and difficulty of the task? In some ways, I hope I have. Because it seems to me the real task of a doctor of ministry program is to move beneath and beyond conventional or utilitarian ways of thinking about the problems of ministry to quite another level of inquiry. A level that doesn't back away from the stubborn problematic of ministry in the contemporary world. It is a level of inquiry that refuses simply to settle for pragmatic solutions or playing our hunches, flying by the seat of our pants. Rather, it seeks to make use of all the instruments and disciplines that inform ministry and grasp the problem in its fullness as well as its concreteness. The doctor of ministry needs to be a real professional who practices his profession at its growing edges. Supervision is equally professional in its effort to assist the student to achieve that level of inquiry about his work. Okay, I think I've taken the full hour, as Bob suggested I do, and whether we'll have time for discussion and questions, maybe tomorrow.